welcome to a new episode of Esports Boom, your weekly esports business podcast. I'm so happy to have on as a guest Jeff Chow, the founder and CEO of Game Gather. Much more on that later. Rarely do we get a guest where, you know, I'm looking through the news articles that we're having this week, and all of it, or almost all of them, touch, you know, Jeff's work in some capacity. So, Jeff, I'm very happy to have you on the podcast this week, and it couldn't be more timely.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me. And, you know, prior to Game Gather, you know, I just left Immortals this past Wednesday as the GM and head of mobile. And, you know, my whole career was built around mobile esports specifically. And a lot of the topics that you talk about are related to that piece. And I'm also involved with the Asia Games as well in Jakarta. Yeah. So super excited to be talking to you about all these topics.
There's a lot, you know, I and this is a plug for Jeff, but there are a lot of great kind of, you know, minds in esports and, you know, a lot of guests that I've had on the show, but a lot of them talk about the same type of topics. I'm really excited for this episode because Jeff talks about two unique kind of underrepresented topics in kind of the American esports ecosystem. One is mobile, which we have tons of great stories about this week. And the second is obviously what's happening in Asia. So I'm so excited to have you on. Let's move on to our first story right away. This week was the launch of the Clash Royale League. So the league kicked off earlier this year by having an open draft of 25 million players who competed to qualify for the 2018 season. Those who made it through qualifiers found themselves on pro teams with, you know, Cloud9, Immortals, obviously, where Jeff used to work, and Complexity. The fall season of the league is kicked off by region. North America started on Monday. 44 pro teams from around the world will spend the season competing for a spot in the World Finals. The Clash Royale League effectively replaces the Clash Royale Crown Championship, a 1v1 amateur showdown that handed out $150,000 in prizes last year. The deal grants the team the ability to sell their own sponsorships and pursue their own deals. So essentially, the teams are free to monetize however they can. Just, you know, to give the audience kind of a sense of it being a work in process and in progress, day one had a had some stream issues, eventually kicked off after 2 hours. But viewership, I think day one, the video on demand has been watched over 300,000 times. I don't know if those views include the actual live viewers, but obviously very impressive numbers. So Jeff, you know, having been involved in mobile game for such a long time and obviously being closely connected to the Clash Royale League, what are your thoughts, first of all, on the league structure as a whole, and secondly, on how they've been doing so far?
Yeah, I love what they're doing. I don't know if a lot of people know, but I actually ran and created Clan Royale League. It's at C Royale League on Twitter. It was the CRL was what it was called before, which is the same kind of abbreviation as the current CRL. And this was my dream, is to have a team-based league like this. The format is impressive. I love how they included 2v2 and King of the Hill. It's super exciting to watch. There's so many teams that are involved, and Supercell did an amazing job of bringing all these teams across the world together, NA, EU, Asia, Latin America. We've never seen it, a mobile esports league on this scale, been executed like this. So it's super exciting, and it's a lot of content too. It's 14 weeks of double round robin play, and I love the accessibility as well. You know, we had a draft combine. You know, there are a lot of players that as young as 16 that are competing on this pro team. I mean, the way that Supercell has done it has really impressed me. And the kickoff was great. Of course, there were some technical issues. You know, there's some comments and getting used to the vertical video format versus the horizontal, which is pretty funny. Yeah. But the regular season format, the production, the talent, the casters, commentators, you know, everything, you know, went really well. And I can see this continuing to grow. And it reached about, you know, 17, 18, almost 20,000 concurrent viewers just on YouTube alone. Mm-hmm. I wish that they would broadcast across more services other than just YouTube, but it is limited to YouTube because YouTube supports the vertical format and Twitch does not. Mm-hmm. So I can see from a viewer experience why they decided to do that. But I'm really excited to see how the league is going to continue to do. All the teams that are in it are really bought in. They're tweeting about it, creating lots of content, marketing, hyping up their teams. And it's very fun to watch, you know, the first, you know, global mobile esports really take off here.
Yeah, you touched on quite a few interesting points here. One, you mentioned the different type of viewing, right? The vertical viewing. So for our audience, you know, just to describe it a little bit, this league is really optimized for mobile viewing. So when you're watching it on your phone, the stream mirrors how the gameplay is generally. So it's a very vertical view. It very much mirrors you know, mobile viewing, and that's really, really awesome. And secondly, the second interesting point you mentioned is obviously this is a global mobile league, and we're in our second story going to talk about Arena of Valor in some capacity. In our fourth story today, we'll also be about Arena of Valor. So mobile gaming is huge outside of the U.S., but this is really the first time we're seeing a spotlight on mobile viewing here in the U.S. So as someone who is very much involved in Clash Royale, what do you think is necessary? What are some things you would like to see the league do or implement over the next 14 weeks as they're growing? Because they're very much evolving day by day.
Yeah, I think one thing that I saw that people had mentioned on Twitter and social media is more information about Latin America and the other leagues. I feel like there is a void of communication sometimes because this is a global esport. So I feel like a lot of the fans, I want to watch EU, I want to watch Asia. So I feel like they're missing on making this a truly global spectator event and announcing and sharing with people on key Twitter accounts, social media, where these matches are taking place. Second is choice. I feel like vertical is great for people that open the game and watch in-app. I think it's amazing. It's really smart. Honor of Kings and Arena of Valor from Tencent do that, and their in-app viewership is just phenomenal. So it makes complete sense to do it that way. But also offer another choice and horizontal, because a lot, I think maybe, you know, a significant amount of viewers do watch it on horizontal, and that's the format that people want to watch it on. Because if you watch vertical on YouTube and you turn the chat comments on, you can't see the gameplay because the YouTube chat literally just takes up the screen. Mm-hmm. So I feel like part of the viewer experience, especially for like a Twitch viewer or even YouTube viewer, is they want to watch it horizontal and also watch chat, because that's part of like esports viewers. You know, you want to see the comments, the emotes that are being used, the call outs, the funny jokes that are being thrown around. That makes the experience a little more special. And I feel like we're missing out on that by not having it horizontal. But other than that, everything else in terms of the planning for it and how they got the teams together, I was behind the scenes with that. Just amazing job by, you know, they have a commissioner for the league or someone that kind of is like, it's like runs a league. They have like a head of esports. So Supercell is taking this very seriously. So I see this really helping the game take on new heights when it comes to showing that mobile is skill-based. It is competitive. There are a lot of awesome personalities, and the way the production is done, it's so focused on the player, which is what I love. It's a lot of gameplay and a lot of player focus. You notice that they're not showing the shoutcasters as much, because I commentated on last season of Clash Royale, and I was one of the commentators, and I felt like it was a little too heavy on the analysts and the commentators. And I feel like the way that they're doing this now is much more about the players, their storylines, and about the gameplay, which is exactly what we need. So many, you know, great changes and things that are happening. So I would say those are kind of my big feedback points for Clash Royale League.
That's great. And just generally, I mean, it's never easy to launch something as big as the Clash Royale League. I am a huge fan, just like you, and I'm expecting them to evolve and to grow tremendously over the next 14 weeks and even beyond. So definitely, I agree completely on your points, and we'll touch a lot more on mobile gaming later on the podcast. But moving on to our next story. So esports is going to be included in the Asian Games as a demonstration event. The games are Pro Evolution Soccer, StarCraft, Hearthstone, Clash Royale, and the other two are Arena Valor and League of Legends. Those two will take place over 3 days. In the selection of the Asian Games, as mentioned by President Kenneth Falk, they said, we exercise stringent criteria. The game must adhere to our vision of promoting integrity, ethics, and fair play. Esports will strive to inspire and motivate youth of the world to be the best they can through educational, entertaining, interactive challenges. Ahead of the Asian Games, participating countries have been busy holding events to select their representatives for Jakarta. What happens in the sprawling Indonesian capital in the 7 days until September 1 will be closely monitored by the IOC, who obviously had their forum not too long ago. You know, just to give some recent information that came out today, according to Esports Observer, the actual medal inclusion for the 2020 Asian Games are kind of put on a hold right now. Commentators said that that's because there's no real kind of organization that represents esports the way Olympic sports does, you know, where you have the Track and Field Federation or FIFA. So that obviously is it something that they need to adapt to. Jeff, you're going to the Asian Games. So obviously,
yes, I am.
That's going to be incredible. And this is really one of those stories where, like, why isn't this not covered more? The IOC forum, which was impressive, but not nearly as groundbreaking, in my opinion, was heavily covered. And this thing, I have to, you know, look, you know, get, you know, secondary and tertiary sources just to find some more information on this. So, you know, first of all, tell what you're going to do and you know, tell us a little bit more about this event and the importance of it.
Yeah, it's a demonstration sport. It's historical for the Asia Games. You know, as you guys know, the Asia Games is the second most viewed and largest multi-sport event in the world after the Olympics. So only the Olympics is a bigger multi-sport event. And Asia Games is getting ahead of the curve by doing a demonstration sport. So it's not official. There's no medal to be awarded. It's just a demonstration. And it's co-organized by three organizations, the Olympic Council of Asia, or the OCA, the Asian Electronic Sports Federation, or AESF, and the Indonesia Asian Games Organizing Committee. So those three organizations have done a phenomenal job getting together and making this happen, and including, you know, six very popular titles. And of course, two of those titles are mobile games. And that's where I'm the most excited about, as you know. Mm-hmm. StarCraft is why I grew up playing StarCraft. I play a lot of Hearthstone and League, of course. But Arena of Valor and Clash Royale, as the two kind of, you know, flagship global mobile esports titles that are included. But what really gets me excited is there are a lot of countries, you know, the mobile game market and gaming market in a lot of these countries are just on the verge of exploding. So we see Kazakhstan, Laos, you know, Sri Lanka, all these countries, right? But the big one I'm looking at is India. India is represented in almost all of these games. And India is a fast-growing game market. It's going to reach over, you know, $1 billion in revenue. It has like over 600 million mobile gamers. And I feel like it's a market that a lot of people just aren't talking about right now until, you know, the wave grows bigger and bigger. In fact, Optic Gaming is probably one of the forward-looking organizations that actually have a Counter-Strike team that is based from India, and they're trying to build that India fan base now, which I feel is very, very smart. So that's what I'm excited for, the Asian Games. It gives, as a demonstration event, it gives credibility to these game titles. It gives a lot of clout and attention to esports across all of these countries. So we could see really a lot of things change once each country is watching these events. Like, how many viewers from India are going to watch, for example? I'm very curious to see what the viewership will look like from Thailand to Vietnam to India to Chinese Taipei to Hong Kong to Sri Lanka to Uzbekistan, you know, Saudi Arabia. I mean, there's so many countries, Pakistan, you know, it's going to be massive potentially in terms of the viewership. And that's what gets me excited, because it's going to continue to propel gaming as a spectator sport, a form of competitive entertainment that has not reached the level it has until now.
Yeah, you know, I loved that you highlighted India, because I always follow Tencent's lead, and Tencent recently set aside a large sum of money specifically for investment in the Indian mobile gaming market. So that's always kind of a canary in a coal mine, but in a positive way. Like, you know, it's about to explode. It's about to really get onto a next level. You're going to commentate, right?
Yes, I will be commentating for the Arena of Valor section. So I'll be kind of the face and analyst commentator for that game. So I'm super excited not only to commentate such amazing teams and countries that are represented. So, for example, China doesn't have Arena of Valor, by the way, but they picked the most popular pros and the best pro players from the Chinese version of Arena of Valor or Honor of Kings to play in this tournament. So I actually got to watch and cast their games, and that's a team that a lot of the teams are afraid of. I mean, I've talked to Team Vietnam, you know, and India, and they're watching and looking at how well this Chinese team is going to play out, because Honor of Kings has been established longer than Arena of Valor has worldwide, especially in mainland China. So that to me is very interesting, because I think it really tells us that, you know, having a global mobile esport is probably the direction Tencent may go. I don't know what their plan is, but having an Arena of Valor and an Honor of Kings is kind of, you know, they're kind of two different games, but the same game at the same time. Yeah. So I feel like the long-term vision and what makes the most sense if it becomes a medal event is to make that one big mobile esport title, like Clash Royale is, for example. So hoping that's the case, the new map changes to Arena of Valor, if you guys look at the new map changes for map 2.0, it actually looks a lot like Honor of Kings. So super excited to see, you know, what that long-term vision will look like from the mobile esports side. But all I can see is up from here.
Yeah, and Honor of Kings, and we're going to touch on that later when we focus on Arena of Valor, is, I believe, the most popular game in China. You know, gets really, you know, I think hundreds of millions of players. Might be a bit over the top, but you know, it's definitely, I think they're building an Honor of Kings theme park soon, so it's really a cultural staple. You mentioned there are some differences between Arena of Valor and Honor of Kings. I did not know that. You know, educate me, you know, what are some of the key differences in actual gameplay?
Yeah, so I was very fortunate to be actually in China for literally, I spent most of my summer like through 4 weeks in China, and I just immersed myself in the game. So I know Honor of Kings extremely well. It's called Wangzhe Rongyao in China. And the game is actually very similar to Arena of Valor. The map is actually smaller, and it's not symmetrical like Arena of Valor is. Arena of Valor has a bigger map. But a lot of the heroes are very similar, if not the exact same heroes, just skinned differently. Mm-hmm. And it's built on the same Unity game engine. So both of the game's source code is pretty close to each other. And basically, what we see from Arena of Valor, like the updates that are happening now, were normally updates that went through for Honor of Kings like 6 months ago. So I feel like both games are much closer in similarity than we realize, because Superman is a guy on a horse in Honor of Kings. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of heroes that have the exact same abilities, the same mechanics, just slightly different, you know, cosmetics and, you know, ability design and graphics, which I feel Honor of Kings is a little cooler. But the heroes are just slightly different in that regard. But the games are very similar. So I feel like the logical sense is to merge both into one huge title for the long term, especially if a game like this will be in the Asia Games and even potentially the Olympics, you know, and you know, we're thinking like 4 years out, but that to me makes the most sense. And that's what I'm most excited about. So we'll see what direction it'll take. But, you know, Honor of Kings and Arena of Valor are brothers and sisters to
that regard. And Honor of Kings has such a strong esports structure in China, and we're going to talk about that with our last story today, but with Tencent ramping up Arena Valor esports activities outside of China, you know, it's such a shame when you have to build these two separate ecosystems where, you know, you can kind of combine these audiences into one much larger. So definitely agree with you on that. If the audience wants to watch it, is there any way to watch in the US? Do you have to go on Twitch? Will it be streamed on Twitch?
Yeah, so the best way, it will not be streamed on Twitch, that as far as I know. I'm not sure exactly where the Asia Games will be streamed. I know for the Honor of Kings events, it's streamed on Chinese platforms and also in-app in the game, which is probably the most popular way to watch and follow the esports scene, because the in-app viewership is just a really great experience. But for the Asia Games, we have not really received any information about where it will be streamed. But once I do, I'll definitely update and share on my Twitter for sure.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll put your Twitter accounts in the description box. But people definitely follow Jeff. A great follow, and especially if you want to know more about these things. So for our third story, a very interesting story on kind of the investment side. So Intel teams up with Overwolf to create a $7 million gamer app investment fund. So Intel and PC App Store Overwolf have launched a joint $7 million fund to invest in new apps, mods targeted at competitive gamers. Developers can submit applications on Overwolf's website, and the fund will initially focus on developers working on apps specifically for Overwolf's platform. Beginning in the fourth quarter of 2018, $10,000 to $500,000 will be invested in each approved developer based on the need and value of the project, rather than acquiring shares in the company developing the app or mod. The fund will be paid back through revenue sharing, providing that the app is monetized. People who don't know, Overwolf is a Steam-like marketplace specifically for tools that provide additional information or features for competitive games. The company recently partnered with esports organization Tempo Storm to promote its tools for games like Hearthstone. I'm a huge fan of Overwolf's arena tool and Fortnite. The platform also hosts third-party apps like Quarterback, which by itself recently raised $2.5 million in seed funding. So Jeff, I did not expect this story to be connected to you. But as I was talking to you about this, as we were going through these stories, and obviously you informed me, about your new venture, you said, this is right up my alley. So, first, what are your thoughts on this story? And then secondly, tell us, a little bit more about GameGather.
Yeah, I love what Overwolf is doing along with Intel. $7 million is a lot of money, and they're supporting the smart time developers, the ones that are doing it part-time, if you look into it. And I love that they're trying to spur that type of innovation and creativity, because as you know, the player experience can always be better. And Overwolf has shown us that with their overlay and their API and their software that allows people to really become better gamers and provides a better experience for them. So I feel like them supporting kind of maybe eventual competitors to their platform, or even, some innovations that improve the player experience, that's going to make the ecosystem even stickier for players, especially specific games that they're playing. So I feel like this is a great collaboration between Overwolf and Intel, and I'm so excited to see what's going to come out of it, like gaming software and stuff like that. And as for me, I've worked on GameGather. It's been a pain point for me for a long time, but GameGather was something that I've been working on the past year. We fully prototyped it. We're coding it now. I have a great chief product officer and a CTO that used to work actually at Mobile Forming, which developed the Overwatch League app, which I don't know if a lot of people know that, but they developed pretty much the Overwatch League app for Blizzard. So it's super exciting to build something that I feel solves a pain point for a lot of gamers, and it's really finding, matching, and staying connected with players. So kind of like a social network, but not really, but it's tailored to specific game communities, like let's say Battle Royale, Fortnite, PUBG. And as you know, matchmaking is one of the biggest challenges and issues for players in any game, whether it's Arena of Valor or, PUBG. You get matched with people that just either speak a different language than you or are different skill tier when the system should be matching with people in similar skill tier. So I feel like right now what we're trying to solve for is have socialization be very important, a part of that matchmaking and finding these players. Because right now I can't really find or connect with a gamer that plays maybe Arena Valor in the LA or my time zone on the West Coast here. A lot of the matchmaking is decided for me through the game. And I feel like Overwolf being like an overlay and adds to the experience for a gamer, that's what GameGather looks to do as well, as a kind of a social platform and discovery tool for gamers to find people they love to play with and then hopefully become gamers with each other, where they fall within each other's social circle and they continue to build a relationship from that. And that's something that I found to be the beauties of a lot of the stories. You've talked to gamers who've met each other and become best friends, or they've started dating, like my girlfriend, we met through the game actually.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's amazing. And I feel like GameGather's mission is to make more of those type of connections happen. And I feel like right now the social features and social just technology and systems and processes in the game are just very bare bones, right? It's not really a feature-rich and connected and seamless experience. And that's what we're building and looking to do. So we're actually before we're launching, we're going to apply for some patents regarding what we're building before we kind of reveal it and launch it. So I'm super excited in the direction it's going and the amount of work that we'll have set up for us. And that's why I need to focus on it full time, because it's reached the point where now is the time. Gaming has never been bigger and growing so rapidly. And I want to make sure that this it adds value to the ecosystem. You know, it's not cryptocurrency, it's not blockchain, you know, those buzzwords that we hear all the time.
Yeah.
It's nothing about that. It's really about adding value to the player's experience and helping them enjoy and play with each other better. And also as a result, because they're finding the right social circles to play with and the right matches in terms of gamer mindsets, skill, you know, demographics, whatever it is, they're going to also enjoy the game more, and it's going to be more sticky. And they're going to be, you know, more engaged with the games that they're playing. And that's going to help, you know, the entire ecosystem from player to publisher and so on.
That's really cool. And definitely looking forward to, as the months progress, hearing more about, you know, solid plans once those things go through. What's really awesome is that your company seems, you know, you put your focus on adding value. Whereas if we're looking at Overwolf, I love Overwolf. And one of the reasons why Overwolf isn't getting too much, strikes from publishers is because each and every one of their tools adds value for the publisher. So a lot of times The publishers are like, I don't have the resources, or I don't want to put resources down to do this type of stuff. I'm happy a company like Overwolf is doing this. So that's really cool. And I also like hearing that your company isn't focused on just one game, right? So that obviously makes things a lot easier if you're trying to grow.
Yeah, you basically said what I said in two sentences. Is, you know, we want, like, the vision long term is, and I worked at Apple, so I know a lot about being focused on the product and the core of your product, right? And game developers want to just make great games, right? They don't got to worry about social systems or processes or, you know, their social features and stuff like that. It's going to add value, but ultimately that's not their area of expertise. And that's where GameGather comes in, is we provide that expertise and serve as that third party, or hopefully long-term being integrated into their game, like how Skillz does it with mobile esports and competitions, into like an SDK. But that's exactly what we're trying to solve for, and let developers focus on building amazing products, amazing game experiences, and we just basically enhance it with the socialization aspects right layered on top of it. So basically what Overwolf is doing. So it's very similar to that. So that's why I'm super excited. We'll see how it goes out, because, you know, we're not focused on any specific game. We are focused more on a game community. And I think that what makes our approach a little different too. We're not trying to be every, you know, 200 plus games out there. We're going to, you know, focus on one community at a time.
That's really awesome. Congrats on the move. And it's obviously exciting. Moving on to our last news story. So Tencent Games and ESL reunite for their Gamescom Arena of Valor showcase. So Tencent Games has announced the second season of its Arena of Valor esports league, the Valor Series. The league will be operated by ESL, who will also, as previously mentioned, host an Arena of Valor showcase at Gamescom later this month. The Valor Series Season 2 will add Latin America as a third competitive region in addition to North America and Europe. Top 6 teams from the online qualifiers will move on to compete in their region's Valor Series, playing for the chance to represent their region at the Arena Valor International Championship later this year. A lot of interesting news. Arena Valor is one of those things, one of those stories that is, once again, kind of underreported. It is doing really, really well outside of China. And obviously, as we talked about just before, Honor of Kings is this huge, you know, thing that isn't really, you know, a lot of us outside of China have difficulty grasping just how big it is. Have worked on Arena Valor, right? So what yep. What do you think of this news? Does it get you excited?
Yeah, I mean, it's not announced yet, but I will be one of the talent.
Congrats, that's awesome.
on the show. So I will continue my role there. So I'm super excited and just want to thank Tencent for their support and everything. And yeah, Arena of Valor is something that it's a point of pride for me, but also frustration because it's so successful outside of mainland China because everyone just talks about China. Well, guess what? This game is super popular outside of China. 6 months ago or so, they reported 10 million daily active users and Tencent just released their quarterly earnings report. 13 million daily active users.
Wow.
They're reporting, you know, double-digit growth year over year in terms of daily active users across their mobile games in general. So the thing is, it's just not as big or popular in the West. So it's getting zero attention, and that's my point of frustration. And that's where, again, it goes back to kind of Game Gather too, because mobile is so social in Asia, in Southeast Asia, in Thailand, in Vietnam, where I'm from, and China, because I'm part Chinese. It's very social. So I feel like the unlock for Arena of Valor is for it to be released on the Switch, which is releasing next month, yes. And hopefully Xbox, PlayStation, and just basically become very social like Fortnite has. And I feel like that is the key to unlocking mobile. It has to be social where a lot of kids are playing it. They have a lot of social circles. And if that doesn't happen, then Arena of Valor won't achieve the same level of sheer success it has in mainland China, in Southeast Asia, in Chinese Taipei. I mean, in Thailand, so many people play. I mean, it's like the country's game to a certain extent. So that's where I feel like there is a lot of hope in Arena Valor. That's why Tencent is doubling down. The prize pool has increased from 100,000 last season to this season. It's going to be 200,000. They added a region. Latin America will also have its own like league where you have to qualify into it. The top 6 teams will play each other in a double round robin. And then the top 4 teams from each region will then meet each other in Sao Paulo, Brazil, right? In Brazil. So they're saying, hey, Brazil is very important. They just had the finals at E3 in LA saying the US market is important. And now they're moving to, hey, South America, Brazil, you're also important to us. And they're having the live finals there. So I couldn't be more excited in terms of the direction. They're continuing to put resources into Arena of Valor. So I'm hoping that the advertising is going to come. That's another point of where I wish Tencent was more aggressive. You know, we see like NetEase's Omni Moji Arena. It's being advertised everywhere. And Arena Valor doesn't have that much advertising at all. So I feel like the hard advertising definitely needs to step up a little bit to get the word out there so that more and more people learn about the game and start playing it because it's a lot of fun. Apple is putting a lot of attention onto Arena Valor and mobile esports in general. They're writing articles about it. They are talking about the game and the updates and putting beautiful graphics and putting it right in front of a user when they open up the app store. So it's amazing to see the support throughout the entire ecosystem. And I feel the last unlock is really the social fabric of the West. You know, once it's a part of the social fabric, it's going to take off. And when it does, like Honor of Kings took less than 7 months to become a monster of a game, Arena of Valor can easily just ignite, like we saw Pokemon Go or Fortnite just literally explode because of the social reasons that led to their massive, massive uptick. So hopefully that will happen to a mobile game like Arena of Valor. I'm still crossing my fingers and, you know, dreaming of that day to come.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but do you think a factor why the growth in outside of China, well, and I have to reiterate this, is incredible what you mentioned, you know, from 10 to 13 million, that those are ridiculous numbers. The reason why it's not as fast as in mainland China is because Tencent's market dominance, you know, especially when it comes to distribution in China, is obviously a lot stronger than outside of China. Could that be a factor?
Yeah, it is a factor. But you look at Southeast Asia, though, right? Look at like Thailand, Vietnam, and these Southeast Asia countries. Tencent doesn't have the same power or distribution advantage that they have in mainland China. And Arena of Valor is extremely successful. And part of it has to do with Garena, because Garena actually publishes Arena of Valor in Southeast Asia. And they're doing an amazing job building up the ecosystem. And what they've done in terms of marketing the game and pushing the game out there has resulted in, you know, Vietnam and Thailand are one of their biggest markets. I mean, millions and millions of players in both those countries alone for Arena of Valor. And even in Chinese Taipei or Taiwan, where my significant other is from, is she said a lot of her friends play it. I mean, it's a very popular game. It's a very social game. And I think that's the key to unlocking it. Of course, having a platform like WeChat will definitely help, like Tencent has in mainland China. Mm-hmm. But Tencent doesn't have that same advantages that they have across Southeast Asia. Of course, some of the people do use WeChat to some certain extent. You know, YouTube is very popular in Southeast Asia. It is the platform that they watch all of their esports tournament. YouTube doesn't exist in mainland China. You have to use, like, you know, either, you know, Douyu, Huya, or the other services there. So I feel like for Tencent to be successful in Southeast Asia, it just shows that it's a culture piece too, but it has been embedded in the social fabric of these countries. And that's why the game has taken off, because people are telling each other to play it, more and more people play it. And then social reasons are very, very strong reason to why people stay, they get introduced to a game, and also why they keep playing a game. Actually, 39% of people, you know, play specifically for social reasons. Otherwise, they would stop playing. Like Fortnite, there's a lot of people that play Fortnite, not because they like super love the game, it's because all their friends play it. And that's why they continue to play it, because they're having fun with their friends. So I feel like that's kind of the unlock for any game, honestly, in the West, is to be viral socially. And to get there, you know, it's a little bit of luck and also a little bit of strategy as well.
That's awesome. Yeah, I didn't think of that. And that's definitely really interesting. And you know, obviously, if you're looking at outside of mainland China and, you know, the nation itself, there are obviously cultural differences when it comes to gaming. But as you mentioned before, I think those are diminishing. So enough about the news of this week. Let's talk a little bit about you. So first of all, you know, you mentioned you worked at Apple and, you know, you went to Immortals. Walk us through kind of your path. How do you ended up in esports and all of the amazing things you have done since?
Yeah, I mean, my story goes all the way back, and I kind of date myself every time I talk about it. I actually went to high school in South Korea for 4 years, and I was a very competitive ladder StarCraft player. Brood War, it's the best esport ever, always. But yeah, I was a big and heavy player StarCraft. Went to a lot of PC cafes there, competed in a lot of local tournaments. And that's where esports is really starting to born and become the global monster. That's when StarCraft just took off, and people are moving from other countries to play professional StarCraft in the league that they had in Korea. And then I went to college and kind of gave up. I played Warcraft 3, the Dota 2 mod. I'm sure a lot of people who play Warcraft 3 and the Dota mod, you know, that took probably a huge chunk of their life away during that time. And I had to like quit playing to focus on school at Cornell University. And then I just had a career in business. You know, I worked and held significant leadership positions, made it all the way to GM of Apple at a very young age, leading, you know, 200 plus employees and, you know, tens of millions of dollars in revenue. And then what got me back to gaming was when Apple announced the iPhone 6, they launched it, and they announced this great mobile game called Vainglory, which is a phenomenally developed and beautiful game. And that got me back into it, because all of my employees, you know, my specialists and frontline team members were playing it. And as a GM, I was like, I might as well play it too. And then we played in the lunchroom together, and it not only connected me with my team even better, and they're like, you're the coolest GM we've ever had, which is pretty funny. But it really brought me back to my passion for gaming, because I've always been a gamer, you know, playing lots of games throughout my entire life. And mobile was, I felt like, something really special with how social it was, and how I experienced it in the lunchroom at my Apple store. So from there, I then decided to pursue kind of my career in esports, where I founded an esports organization, Hammers Esports. I then even competed as a pro player, and I've done almost everything in the vertical. I've coached a team. I've been, you know, head of business development and partnerships. I've done so many things, you know, Twitch partner, streamer, you know, Discord partner, because I ran a mobile league, Clash Royale, like we talked about earlier, like, yeah, CRL or Clan Royale League. And now I've been a talent commentator as well. And then that win led me to Immortals, where Noah talked to me. He kind of acquired my mobile team in Vainglory, and that's where I joined Immortals. And from there, you know, I joined Liquid, and I helped Liquid, you know, lead their Arena of Valor team over in South Korea for the Asia International. It was like an invitation to Liquid to participate there. And that was an amazing experience. Just to be back in Korea again was just surreal for me. and then came back to Immortals to run their mobile division. So that's kind of been my story. And I've been on panels talking about mobile gaming and mobile esports. You know, I have a lot of experience in kind of the entire vertical, and I'm closely connected to so many of the publishers, anywhere from Tencent, Supercell, to even Mixi. Mixi is like the Tencent of Japan, basically. They're like a billion-dollar gaming company in Japan. So I had some connections there as well. And I've done all of the esports leagues from a talent perspective. I've done Vainglory League and the World Championships. I've done Clash Royale and the Crown Championship Global Series. And I've done Tencent's Arena of Valor, you know, the World Cup and Asia Games coming up here. So, yeah, it's been a very exciting and honestly crazy journey. Just looking back, I can't believe how much has happened and the growth of the industry and all the amazing people I've got to meet, the players I've got to work with. And, you know, it's been very unique in that sense. And I couldn't be more excited. And all those experiences have led me to found GameGather. And I feel like, you know, things happen for a reason. And I feel like my life was kind of set up in this path, and the dots are starting to connect in a weird way. So that's super exciting for me.
that's really awesome. So, I mean, obviously there's a large thorough line when it comes to mobile esports. And, you know, when people in the industry are looking at mobile esports, whether you're an orc trying to get in, you know, in whether it's a team or a player, whether you're an investor or whether you're just someone who is working in the industry tangentially, what are some, you know, kind of key learnings you can give to them?
Yeah, I think the key is, you know, for mobile esports specifically, it's the long game. If you really want a hot career in mobile esports, then Southeast Asia or Asia should be your destination in terms of those titles. But in North America, it's just starting up with Supercell's Clash Royale League. And the biggest advice that I can give is, you know, continue to pursue it, but as a passion point and a hobby that takes up a lot of your time. You know, definitely don't quit school or your job for it until it becomes an opportunity that's big enough for you. And that's going to happen when mobile becomes big enough. And I feel like that's kind of been my story, because honestly, I was extremely well paid at Apple, you know, and doing mobile, you know, it wasn't about the money for me, which really was fulfilling, honestly. I met so many people and built so many relationships, and that's what it's really about, is continue to work in the ecosystem. Don't kind of jump off the window unless you see an end goal as part of your journey to helping you, you know, support yourself. And if you have a family, your family as well. And that's probably the biggest advice I can give, you know, just wait it out. I mean, mobile is going to be big. All the trends are pointing in the right direction. The West is not moving as fast, of course, but it's still trending in that direction. There's more and more mobile gamers. You know, there's 200 million mobile online casual gamers. You know, it's called Generation Mocha. Adweek just talked about it. So there's much more attention being put and emphasized on this mobile gaming market. The advertising revenue doesn't even match what PC and other platforms get. And it just tells you mobile is extremely underserved. It's a place ripe for innovation. So the people who take the risk, who believe in mobile, and who really go out there as pioneers are the ones that are probably the most rewarded. And that's how I feel the mobile esports landscape is right now. It's like the redheaded stepchild that has the most potential, that's making the most money. I mean, mobile is going to be half of the entire gaming revenue globally. I think it's already half, and it's going to continue to grow at a rapid pace, 30% year over year growth. And we see what's happening in China. It's only a matter of time before what we see happening in China and Southeast Asia to become the rest of the world, like StarCraft. It just goes back right to my experience with Korea. StarCraft was something, was a phenomenon. Everyone was like questioning it across the world. People that love StarCraft moved across the world to play in the StarCraft League. So I feel like mobile is in that same perspective right now, that bubble. But that bubble is going to encapsulate the whole globe pretty soon. So just keep doing what you're doing and don't give up on mobile, because it's going to be something that once it explodes, you got to be in the position to take advantage of it. And if you're not, then you know, you're going to be the person that's behind and wished you got in earlier than you did.
I think I couldn't have ended it better. So, Jeff, thank you. Thank you for coming on. This has been an enlightening conversation for me, and I'm sure for the audience as well. If people want to follow you to learn to learn more about what you're doing. If people want to follow GameGatter, if that's possible at the moment, how can they best do that?
Yeah, so you go to GameGatter.com. So it's GameGether.com. It's like Game Together, so it's GameGatter. That's why it's called that. Also, my Twitter is at SGeneris, or SGeneris. I'll also be much more active on Medium now that I'm not working like three jobs. So I'll be writing a lot of more articles about the esports space. There's a really popular article that I received a lot of good feedback about in terms of esports hypergrowth and what that means, what that looks like. So definitely check that out. And you know, follow me on Twitter is probably the best way to keep in touch, because there's a lot of things that I'll announce or publish for Medium and stuff like that on Twitter. So if you guys want to hear more news and interested in mobile, definitely give me a follow on Twitter. And hopefully if anyone has any questions, you know, feel free to reach out to me.
I cannot recommend following you on Twitter more. It's eye-opening, just if only for to see a glimpse of mobile and Asian esports and what the future only can hold. Thank you for coming on the pod, Jeff. This has been a new episode of Esports Boom, and we'll see you next week.